Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
Things done. Work for the Holy Ghost. Work for the Son.
It's good to be with you here on this Monday. Here's the deal. I failed to keep my promise. Remember at the start of the year, I said, hey, man, we didn't make 52 episodes, and I was supposed to make them up for Pete, and I didn't do it. And I thought to myself, no, we're going to do better. We're going to be just fine. And sure enough, I'm not even sure that I posted the second episode of the year, and then we were gone for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like instant fail.
Yeah.
It was. I have good. Well, the weather was bad one night, and then what was it? Oh, I was out of town.
Out of town.
Hey, man. I'm not used to this. Mike, you're more used to this than I am, but like, my work has been taking me out of town, and I hate it.
It's brutal.
I used to like it. I used to like, oh, we're gonna be in a hotel. Oh, we're gonna eat at a fast food restaurant. Yeah. And I was there for 4 days, and I got to day three, and I'm like, this sucks. I want my own pillow. I will eat whatever salad or thing that my wife is making that would be fantastic right about now, and I want to go home.
Yeah, this is how they suck you in, right? They tell you say stuff like, hey, you know, you might have to travel every once in a while, and your brain thinks, yeah, that sounds cool.
Yeah,
you know, hotel.
Yeah,
you don't got to clean up
the
after
movie star
yourself.
Life.
Yeah, right.
That's cool. I can go out to eat. That's going to be awesome. You know, like you got your whole life planned. You're like, oh, 10-15% travel. That don't sound like too much. That'll be cool, you know. And then you start doing it, and you're like, boy, I really hate this. I mean, I hate everything about it. And then all of a sudden, you start getting picky, and then your hotels are crappy, and you're like, I don't want to eat at McDonald's no more. I don't even want to go down to the Texas Roadhouse, because then you got to go in there, and you got to sit down, and you got to wait for the food.
Pretend like you like people.
Yeah, you're like, hey, you know. And then especially if you're working out of town by yourself, now you're eating all by yourself in a restaurant full of people, and you're like, you know, how hermited is it just to get this thing to go, and I'll eat it watching, you know, the Junker reruns on the A&E, you know, where they open the storage wars, you know.
Hey,
and it's just terrible. So, it really is.
So, like, the third night I was there, it was the night before I was going to leave, and I was at a Hyatt. And, like, it's like a business Hyatt. So, like, no one uses the pool that's there. But they got a, you know, they got a pool, and they got a hot tub. And I think to myself, man, I should go sit in that hot tub.
No.
And so I put my shorts on, I go straight in, and, of course, the lights are off because no one's been in there for 10 hours. And so I walk in, and I'm sitting in the hot tub, but I couldn't have been more than 45 seconds, and I thought, I feel ridiculous.
You are a lone man in a hot tub.
Just sitting in a hot tub, you know, I turn
with
on
a bunch of lonely businessmen watching.
Well, you know what the scary part would be is there's a bunch of dudes walking by. They're like, look at that lone wolf. All right, there's a guy in there. I'm going in too.
And then you're like, Moses, let's do this.
That's what I was deathly afraid of. That I thought someone's going to come in here, and I thought I'm going to have to awkwardly get up and leave right away.
No.
But then, like, I felt elitist and wrong because I get in there, and then, like, I have to turn on the bubbles. And then, like, what's going on in my mind is these bubbles are just for me. They are tailored to my preference. This is stupid. And my kids aren't here swimming in the pool. Like, whenever you're right, Mike, you go out to eat, and like, I'd like to share it with my wife and be like, oh, good. Hey, look at all these places we eat. But no, I'm just like, oh, hey, I got the salmon burger. What did you? Oh, there's no one else here.
You know what? Like, it's a terrible dichotomy, right? Because, like, when I have to go out of town, my work gives me like X number of dollars per meal or whatever, right? And so when I started this job, I mean, we were just a young family growing out, so we'd have much money. And so I was eating like a king. When I was out. So, mm-hmm. Like, I'd go out and you know, for dinner, and they'd say, look, you can spend up to, like, $25. I'm like, well,
that's a nice dinner for a dude.
Yeah, right. $25, you know? And so, like, I'm like,
go to the lobster buffet?
Yeah, give me a steak and a potato and some soda then, I guess, you know? And then I'd call home, like, how was your guys' night? Well, we had ramen and chicken. I'm like, well, yeah. I didn't. You know? So you feel like a big schmuck, you know? So the next day, I'm toning it way down. I'm like, I don't care. This company ain't going to own me. I'm going to eat ramen and chicken like my family. I ain't mean some highfalutin dude out of town. And then the worst part, this is the true story of what happens when you take a job that takes you out of town a lot, is sooner or later, your house starts to run without you, right? And so you have to, and it has to happen.
Yeah,
it has to happen, right? And it's not anything offensive to you, you know? But like, when you go out of town for 4 or 5 days at a time, and then it starts happening, you know, every 6 weeks or something, sooner or later, the house starts to run without you. Someone else feeds the dog. Someone else takes the garbage out. Someone else tucks your kids in bed at night. Hopefully your wife. And not some
Uncle Johnny's here.
Wait a minute.
But like,
I heard a guy named Randy.
But you get
Randy from Craigslist.
Randy, I need a bed tucker. So, So you get
I'm in.
So you get home, on that Friday or whatever, and you're like, this house ran without me. Like
You're like a stranger. They're looking at you like, we don't do that, Dad.
And you don't actually know your place.
That's not where the cereal goes, Dad.
It's brutal. Like, it's really hard to get used to, and like, I hate everything about it.
By the way, we drink soy milk now.
Yeah.
Actually, that happens at my house all the time.
I was going to say, I'm 100% certain that's exactly
what happened. They're like, well, Grace has stopped drinking milk now. She's off dairy. We put her on rice milk or something. I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
Oh, we did.
Now, did this happen because I was gone? Or it just happened to happen while
Dad,
I was gone?
I want rice milk. Hey, man, here's the deal. Like, I think that might just be a married dude thing. Because I love traveling. Like, traveling for work is one of my favorite things to do. I would go everywhere, and I'd have so much.
I actually was in a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, so last year I was gone for 4 months out of the year altogether because it was almost a little bit over a month at a time. I loved it. I thought it was amazing. And I was the dude in the hot tub, and I thought it was great.
Maybe you had as much marital interaction away as you do at
home.
That's
what I'm saying. I think it might just be a married man problem because loved it. I had so much fun eating out all the time. Like, I loved going to new restaurants and I rented. I think, you know what the funny thing is? I'm so used to driving beater, awful vehicles that I think my favorite thing was renting cars.
Yeah.
And finally feeling what it was like to drive in a nice vehicle for an extended period of time.
That's true. 6 minutes passes and you're out like, I hope this doesn't break down. You know what? I'm in a rental.
Exactly, right? Like, I'm sitting there thinking,
I don't care
like,
if it does.
Do I need to worry about something snapping? Like, my tire's going to explode or my brake's going to give out? No, man, I'm in a rental vehicle. This is living life.
We started doing that for vacation. We'll rent a vehicle now just because it kind of adds to the cost, but it's like, you know what? It's a new vehicle.
Yeah, that's a good point. It does add to the cost, but like, relatively speaking, it really ups the game.
It does.
Oh yeah.
We're going somewhere in March and it's like, I already got my vehicle picked out.
All right.
If I weren't trying to figure out how finances work, loving Jesus, I'd rent one every Tuesday. Just drive around the day feeling good in a nice vehicle and then go back.
I did do that one day. I rented me a Mustang convertible and I drove to Davenport. That was a nice day. And it was like $40. I mean, it really wasn't much.
Yeah, right. It's cheap.
I was just like, it was a bit during the week, one day. I was just like, I can do that once every year.
It's like, I'm going to treat myself to something nice. Oh, what are you doing? Going on vacation? Nope, I'm going to rent a Mustang.
Driving around. What are you doing?
Where are you going? West Des Moines.
There's a hoo-ha there, right? Because that's where I be.
Is there some kind of buffet there? Because I'm kind of excited about it.
I do I found that now I'm becoming an elitist with a rental car. So I had to rent a car, and they gave me like a 2015 Sentra.
Whoa.
Nissan Sentra. And I thought, what's this old school? And so I get in there, and it has a red dash, like it's not a full screen, and a full color. It's red and beige and I was disgusted. And then it doesn't have Bluetooth. It has Bluetooth.
How dare
like,
they?
You can talk, you can make a phone call with the Bluetooth, but you can't listen to your tunes.
Oh,
and so I had to stop at the gas station and buy an overpriced cord so that I could listen to tunes for a 3.5 hour drive to Minneapolis. Yeah. And the tune connector is in the it's in the armrest.
Mm-hmm.
So like you can't shut the armrest all the way.
It didn't have that little lip there.
No,
the
it's
annoying.
It's a terrible design.
That's lame.
Yeah. Hey, man, you should go the next time you rent a car. You should immediately look there and go, wait a minute. I'm not getting involved in this situation.
I put it in my request because I'm going again Wednesday or picking up a car tomorrow. And I said, prefer Bluetooth audio.
Exactly. I rented a truck recently. I can't remember where I went. It was like a pretty long trip, 8 to 12 hours, whatever. And
Colorado.
It might have been. I don't know. Anyway, I have a pretty nice truck now. And I thought, I'm going to get a new truck. Because it's not new, but it's nice. Nicer than I've had.
Yeah.
I thought, I'm going to get me a brand new truck. So I ordered the thing. You know, it was all mine. You know, it was a full cab, full thing in the pictures. You know, like kind of like mine, big four-door thing. And I'm thinking, this is going to be nice. I'll be I mean, mine's kind of riding in style now.
Yeah.
This is going to be like real style. And I show
Ultra
up.
Damn.
And it's like it's not full size. I was cramped. I was cranky.
Oh no.
And I'm like, I was going to get something else, but I thought, but it's a little like satellite place. It's not like you have a whole parking lot.
Right.
It's like, I'm going to get what I get. You know, it's like crap.
Oh
so
no.
And I drove this big trip and I'm like, oh, this is not comfortable. I should have taken my own truck. That was terrible.
I'm paying for high society.
I know.
High society.
I deserve better. It was newer, but
yeah, you never feel more entitled than when the car rental place screws something up.
Right,
Lexington. I went to Lexington, Kentucky. That's what.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
That is
that's
a long drive
Colorado.
In a cramped vehicle.
Yeah, other direction.
I had to rent a car on the way back from. I was working in Colorado, and I'd ridden out with a guy, and he ended up having to go home early, and took his company truck with him, right? So I'm like, well, I can stay and work for a couple of days, but I'm gonna have to rent a car to get back. And it's the first time I'd ever rented a car. And like, I ended up with like a Jeep Patriot or something, you know, and it was like a 4-cylinder Jeep Patriot. And I'm normally used to driving, say, a diesel Dodge 5500 truck, you know? And so like, this thing is getting blown all over the road. I'm driving across 3 states and I'm like, I don't know what's wrong with this thing. But then I don't have to stop at weigh stations, right?
Right.
And so it was a luxury as far as I was concerned. Like, I would smile and wave at the weigh station man and he'd have no idea why. And I'm like, 'cause I ain't stopping to have you look my thing over and find me. And so I'm rolling home and like, I hated it. 'Cause I mean, every time I get in my own car, I spill soda. You can't eat chips in there. You make a big mess or something. And so like, I really hate the whole experience of just traveling in general. But like, I didn't like that. I feel like you guys like that rental car business, and it's not for me. I like my own vehicle.
Huh. Yeah, yeah, I do.
I like do too.
Rental cars. Yeah, I love rental cars.
Yeah,
you're an outlier. Speaking of refugees, anyway, you're listening to Life from the Path. Here's what we got going on the show tonight. Mike wants to talk about immigration in response to the presidential executive order. I also found this article, and it says pastor caught in bed with parishioner's wife won't resign because God has already forgiven him.
I have totally heard this excuse from someone in the past couple weeks.
Really?
Like, were you not this exact not the exact situation, right? But the situation happened, and like some follow up discussion needed to happen, and they said, "Look, I've already asked for God for forgiveness, so we should just drop it." I'm like, that's bold.
That's very bold.
That is bold.
Way to use the scripture for your gain.
Right on. So yeah, so that's interesting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we'll. I wanted to hit that. That discussion. That's hold on, I'll just read this to you. A Tallahassee, Florida pastor who was forced to, forced to flee naked after he was caught having an affair with a parishioner's wife says
caught
he will
in the act.
Yeah, I mean, the husband comes in and goes to get his shotgun. Man flees, in the buck wild out into the streets.
Oh man.
And he says, you know, I'm not stepping down.
Yeah. The Lord's already fixed this for me.
What happened? Oh man, we got some sort of virus.
Well, that's unfortunate.
That sounds like an awful article then.
Hold on.
that puts a whole new level. He got what he had coming.
Oh man, okay, there we go. All right. Just days after the Reverend O. Jermaine Simmons Sr., pastor of the popular Jacob Chapel Baptist Church, was caught sleeping with a parishioner, he was recorded telling his very supportive church that it is better for the church if he remains committed to God's work in the pulpit.
Right on.
What I want from God, I've already received it, and that's his forgiveness. What I'm asking of our members is something I may or may not get, and that is your prayers. And I'm asking for your forgiveness, Simmons said as his congregation said amen and gave him a standing ovation. It says a report from the Tallahassee Police Department acquired by the Christian Post said Simmons, 37, was caught in bed with Clanisha Stevens, 34, by the woman's husband, Benjamin Stevens, III. Both Clanisha and Benjamin are his parishioners.
Why does everybody have these super elongated names, you know?
Yeah.
There's Simmons Sr., there's Clanisha.
Where's a Todd Smith when you need him, you know? Clanisha has been named married for 7 years, told police that she first met Simmons in 2014, but they have been establishing a relationship as of October 2016. On January 17th, she said Simmons came over to the home she shares with her husband and their children so they could talk over starting a business, patents and trademarks, and providing less fortunate kids with clothes and shoes.
Oh, come on.
During the meeting, she said they started having sex.
All right, yeah, that happens.
That's readily. A logical business meeting.
At my meetings all the time.
Happens all the time.
Yeah,
in
yeah, you know.
Jeez, come on.
The Christian Post is telling me to be delicate here. While they were engaged, her 6-year-old son's school was trying to get in touch with her to pick him up. Since she didn't answer, the school reached out to the boy's father. Oh, he picks up their son, heads home, only to discover his wife engaged with Simmons in their oldest daughter's bedroom.
Man.
What?
Wait, no, okay, I have a question, though. Like, why is there so much detail to this story? Do you know what I'm saying? A crime hasn't been committed. You know what I'm saying?
It sells.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's raunchy.
But they would have gotten it from the wife or the guy.
No, right? That's right. Who's explaining all these
probably
details?
The husband.
Well, he wasn't there for the discussion
patent.
On the trademarks and patents.
The patent and shoe discussion.
Let's see. Benjamin reportedly screamed, "I'm going to kill him," and went to the couple's bedroom to retrieve a small handgun. On hearing the threat, the frightened pastor fled the couple's home naked without waiting to see what would happen.
That's understandable.
Were later called to the scene and were able to prevent any loss of life or injury. I just don't understand this, man. Okay, wait, here's the explanation. Sorry. He said he will not be deterred from God's work regardless of what the public or dissenting members of his congregation might think of his decision to remain at the helm of his church.
Yep.
If I stop preaching, if I stop doing what the Lord called me to do over this, it presupposes that I was qualified to do it in the first place.
Well, okay. I mean, that's a solid explanation. He's kind of sucked me in. Go ahead.
What?
Huh?
I'm not even following it. It presupposes, if he stops, it presupposes that he was qualified in the first place. Yeah. That means if he doesn't stop, it supposes that he wasn't qualified at all.
Oh, crap, yeah. Okay, now.
This doesn't even make any sense.
That's kind of reverse.
I feel like what I took away from it, and maybe it's because he's a wordsmith or whatnot.
Oh, wait, I get the point. So here he continues. If I quit, if I walk away over this, it presupposes that I deserve to preach last Sunday when there was no scandal. I was a wretch then. I'm a work in progress now. But what the Lord allows, we will move forward. So his point is that, like, I didn't deserve to preach last Sunday either. So I'm just in the same spot here. You just have something definable.
Okay. Okay, seriously. This guy cannot seriously think that that's a valid argument.
I don't know. He sucked me in.
Hey, we're all imperfect. I mean.
Yeah, well, yes, we are all imperfect. Grace, and that is a very valid point. Does he not take into the concept of the ramifications of, like, losing people in his congregation because he's saying, oh, I was a bad guy then, and now I'm a bad guy now. All you know is more information. And then on top of that, yes, he may still be a sinner no matter what, and yet God may forgive him for that, and that's a good thing, but that doesn't mean that you're still fit to lead a congregation.
So he's paraphrasing Paul's description of qualifications of pastors and elders is basically, as long as you suck yesterday, it's okay to suck today.
Just keep on trucking.
I've been in the muck and the mire the whole time.
I mean, Paul struggled. He didn't do what he wanted to do and did what he didn't want to do, just like me.
Just like me. In the nude.
And this guy full of himself is refusing to step down. And then gives his full-on explanation for not stepping down.
Here's the thing, though. I mean, here's what I got to take away from this man that I might appreciate. Is everyone else at least phones in a phony trial of like a couple, 3 weeks of, I just got to get right with the Lord, and then separates himself with the congregation, knowing full well they're just going to rock back in within a month. You know what I'm saying? And this guy, he at least saved the show. He's just like, yeah, I'm not going to go anywhere. Everyone else puts on this big PR campaign. Like, all the popular pastors that have been caught doing something like this are like, I just need some time alone with the Lord and with my family.
I need to work it out with my wife.
Yeah. And 6 weeks later, hear that whiz bang there. Well, it's all fixed. The Lord's doing miraculous.
Our marriage is great.
And people applauded, right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
That shows there's no accountability going on. You can't have a church without accountability.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Is like, I would fully expect that you got a group of people reading Bibles and he does all this and we're like, yeah, you know, we're not going to have that. Nope. Nope, I'm sorry. It's right here. We read the thing that you told us to read, and it says you can't do the thing and be the geek. No, we're not going to do that. Ah, man.
So what? Here's the thing, though. It's like, what happens if he gets caught in a lie?
Yeah, like, what are you saying? Like, what does it take for this man to not be the pastor here?
Yeah, right.
Like, so, what would you have to do?
And granted, the Bible holds sexual sin as a sin against, like, it holds it in a bit of a different category, mm-hmm. I would say.
Well, there's outright rebellion, and then there's, like, whoops. And maybe it was a whoops.
That's what I'm saying.
But they were developing a relationship, it sounded like. So it's a lot of whoopses.
Now, he just happened to be talking about a charity and his Wang Johnson fell out.
Right, exactly. I don't know how the conversation goes.
Well, how did that happen? Well, let's go with it.
Well, what we're going to do is we're going to distribute these shoes to the homeless. And by the way, you look great. Where is your eldest daughter's bedroom, by chance? We should work our way into there.
You're not supposed to pick up your kids from school, are you?
No, okay, great.
Practical conversation. Here's the deal. Adultery.
And I suppose that the details of the story do bear out this type of thing. I mean, it happens to all kinds, but I mean, you couldn't have done it more stupidly.
No, he's not a serial cheater, obviously, because he's done it so badly to know that, like, obviously, if you don't pick up your child, someone's going to call the husband.
Or he's done it so much that he just figures he's just not going to get caught because he hasn't yet.
Right. I mean, to Dan's point, he's a pretty
pretty bold.
He's a pretty arrogant guy. Yeah, yeah, you know what? My
I'll
wife's
be on
good.
This.
Lord's good.
I'm good.
He's justified it enough.
I already got forgiveness from the Lord. I don't care what y'all say. Yeah. I'm still going to preach.
He's justified it enough in his own heart that now he can say it out loud. And
how does a dude come? Let's say it was a whoops, okay? Can a pastor come back from this? Like, is there an acceptable amount of time?
I think if there's a whoops, I think he can.
Yeah. I think part of admitting, whoops situation, part of admitting that is recognizing that you are not as strong as you believed yourself to be, which means you can't hop right back into that thing. I think it takes you a little bit of time and some wise counsel around you for a while to figure out, to reach a level where you actually understand where your deprivation was there.
And you're like, coming with a contrite heart, but he doesn't appear to be.
No, yeah.
Something got me here. Let's get me fixed so that doesn't happen again.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I
still think about this once in a while, how naive I am. And I think I told you this before. Like, back when I was in my early 20s, I was called over to this gal's house and attended the church. And she had, like, full-on lingerie on, you know. And I just thought, well, that's really weird, you know. And I still went in, you know. And we had a conversation, and the whole time I'm like, okay, just don't really look there, you know.
Yeah.
But I should have thought, I'm glad I didn't go on and think, maybe she's really wanting me to do something. You know, that never even occurred to me.
Yeah.
You know, until like 30 years later, I'm like, huh.
Hey, wait a minute.
Wait a minute.
Was she throwing herself at me?
Was that like, hey, what's he going to do?
You know, now that you mentioned it, this has never happened again. No one has invited the pastor over in a negligee. That's weird.
Hey, man. Yeah,
I thought that was normal.
Praise the Lord for that type of to blindness, though, right? Like,
I guess.
Because the truth is like, I suppose, to the minute you recognize something like that, it brings a risk to say, hey, I am someone to be gone after, right? Like, it's almost better to be like, you know what? I had no clue. I just had no idea.
I would have been like a Joseph and just ran, you know, but I was just like, okay, this is really weird. Maybe she forgot it was coming. It's like, no, she knew it was, all these innocent things are going through my head, trying to keep my thoughts innocent. I wasn't, you know, totally innocent.
Right.
Being, but, yeah, anyway.
Oh, man.
That was just bad.
Yeah,
that
maybe, maybe I'm not on his side anymore. I don't know, that speech had me for
a minute. Mike, here's what he has to say to you.
Okay.
I'll never be sorry enough for some people. I don't have the energy for that right now. I just got done running and other physical activity.
That's right.
I'm winded.
When was the last time you were down Third Avenue?
I had a gun. Yeah.
You ever ran from a man with a gun after you,
engaged
with his wife?
I'm gonna kill him.
But I have to be clear that God is pushing us forward. Pushing us forward. He said it twice.
What?
I'm sorry, I didn't expect that. He said it twice, though. The quote in the article is, but I have to be clear that God is pushing us forward, period.
Do you say it with a wink?
Pushing us forward. He noted.
You know.
Oh, man. Yeah, anyway.
That's awful.
I just didn't see that coming.
That's a tough situation.
Hey, how upsetting for a church to sit there and applaud. I mean, they're just little, you know, stooges, whatever. What's am I trying to say?
That's true. I mean, like,
him.
Here's the thing: you don't want to see. You don't want to be. This is tough. You know, because like, let's say he goes through this speech, right? And you can tell 75% of them are on board, right? Hook, line, and sinker. They're like, yeah, yeah, grace. Give him the man of grace, you know. And you're the one, that the guy in the crowd that's like, you know, I don't know about this. Now you look like a guy that doesn't like to hand out grace, and they're like, oh, I see. Johnny Perfect in pew 5 decides that he's going to hand out grace to nobody, you know.
Robert Legalism over here.
Yeah, even though he's the guy that's like, you know, maybe we should have someone else steer this ship for a little while, because this man is obviously flagrantly doing whatever he wants.
I mean, is that not your stereotypical interaction with Christians on the net, though? Like, 75 are like hyper grace. We don't react to any form of unrighteousness as if God cares. And the other 25% are bigoted radicals because they're like, hey, you know what? Maybe you should stop acting that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, they go to the Baptist church in Tallahassee. That's rough times. All right, Mike, so what is this, what about this refugee business is on your mind?
Well, so here's the thing, is I've been thinking about this all day long, trying to figure out where I actually sit on this, right? Cause like, obviously, judging by the last story, I'm easily taken in by words, you know. People could put a turd out and polish it up. I'm like, you know, that man has got a solid turd going.
That has some good qualities.
I've been listening to political radio almost all day on both sides of the fence, you know, to just, and all I do is hear, every time they get a Jesus guy on there, I'm like, will you shut up? You sound so ridiculous. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like he says exactly what he wanted to say and then like holds up like a Jesus sign. That's every time they interview a guy, he's like, blah, 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 country safe, blah, 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 9/11, blah, 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 other countries, Jesus. I'm like, you know, can we find someone that can put two thoughts together and talk about this? And then, you know, everyone else is screaming human rights violations and, you know, we're, this is, immigrants made our country and blah, 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 you know, so all this stuff is coming together. I'm like, man, what, do I even really think something here? Like, am I completely devoid of coming up with a rational thought? And what I came to was, is like, no one that they interviewed or no one that they talked to, and it doesn't seem like the conversation that anybody wants to have was, like, this is a very, very gray issue. Like, it's a completely gray, and both of the major sides want to paint it as if it's completely black and white, and it is absolutely not completely black and white. And maybe just to recap, you know, the president put out an executive order and basically said, look, we're banning travel, immigration from these seven countries, and obviously they're Middle Eastern countries, and which happen to hold the majority of them are Muslim in descent. It was implemented really poorly. Like, even if there's reasons behind why they're doing what they're doing, and I'm assuming they have information that I don't. But the way they implemented it was just iffy, right? Like, it could have probably been done a little bit better, especially with people that already have green cards and whatever and live here. But long story short, we basically said, look, we're going to take these groups of people and we're not going to allow them in this country. We're just not going to let them immigrate right now because it's a threat, you know, to a certain extent. And it kind of boiled down to, we talked about a little bit about this when the Syrian refugee crisis came up, right? And where I have a hard time marrying this up, to kind of bring this to a head is on an individual basis, I'm completely okay with all of it, with letting people in this country because I feel like I'd let them in my house. Just on an individual Christ following basis, they're the sojourner. So I have a hard time going, no, we're not going to allow this. But then to take that belief and then spread it out to the nation I live in, having to do with security that I'm not in charge of, I have no direction over. I don't enforce or not enforce. I don't have, you know, I only have the facts around my, you know, the 50 feet around my own house and around my own neighborhood. And so then my mind goes, you know what? This is gray. It's gray for me. I'm still sojourner. That's actually just how I feel about it, right? Like I felt when we were talking about the Syrian refugee crisis is when everybody was up in arms about it. I'm like, look, if the government wants to do its job here, then say, look, have everyone from that wants to adopt one of these families, tell us so and we'll vet them. And then you say, look, we'll take a family. And then the government's job is to vet them and make sure that they're not a security risk when they come in. But like, it's your job to house them and feed them and help them find their way because that's our job. Our job is to take care of people like that. And so I thought that was a perfect solution for all of our immigration problems, especially with the refugee crisis was, look, if you want to say it's the government's job to take care of these refugees, that's not so much true. It's your job. So why don't you tell the government, yeah, I'll sponsor them. They can live at my place. I'll make sure they get a job. I'll try to get them acclimated to society, get them moving in the right direction for citizenship. You vet them to make sure they should even be in this country. As long as they pass your security clearances, I'll take care of them. They're not on the government's tap, right? That's not so much the case with the ban on the Middle Eastern countries that came through over the weekend, right? But I'm interested to hear kind of where you guys sit on this thing. Cause like I said, like after a certain amount of time of listening to things, I start to realize that it's too gray for me to, I don't even know. I can't even make a solid call. Human wise, I'm like, you know, we take care of people. That's just what we do. As Christians, that's what we do. We take care of people. And like I heard probably 10 interviews from Christians or the Christian point of view today, they're like, this nation was founded on Jesus and we can't let people in here that don't know Jesus. I'm like, how do you convert people to Jesus if you don't ever meet people that don't know Jesus?
Right.
That don't make any friggin' sense at all, right? Like, you love America. I get it. And you think America runs awesome when you believe that the country was founded on God, which, I mean, that's a hard sell for me, really. But, like, I hear what you're saying. You know, you believe something is true and you're plowing ahead forward with it. But, like, the truth of the matter is like, we take care of the sojourner in the least of these. And it seems to me that people are trying to get away from where they came from and call a new place home. That man probably qualifies for the least of these as far as I can tell.
I would go on the side of, it's pretty black and white to me. Based on there are two general qualities of God, his kindness and his, I will say, wrath, for lack of a better word. It's the job of the church and Christ followers to represent the kindness part. We're people of grace. We're people of love. We take over, we take and meet the needs of the least of these. You know, we feed the hungry, clothe the poor, the whole naked, the whole thing. The government's job is the wrath part. They're the ones who lay down the law. They're the ones who protect the citizens. Those are two different jobs. And looking at all the arguments people are having on social media, I'm just like, the people are confusing the two, and they're trying to project the job of the church onto the government, and that's not the government's job. And the government's, other people are projecting the government onto the church, and that's not their job. Our job's to love. If there happens to be a sojourner walking by, and we can meet their need, we let them in. We feed them, we clothe them, we do what we have to. The government's job is to keep them out. I mean, that was true in Jerusalem, who was told to take care of the people. They built walls. I mean, you know, they just did. There are some countries, they even killed the cattle. You know, it's just, there's the state has to decide certain things that are beyond me. Like you said, I don't know what's going on and stuff. That's their job is to protect me. There's enough need around here that we're all going to keep pretty busy. If we're legitimately meeting needs. It's not like we don't have enough needs to meet. It's not like we're laying around going, gosh, is there more people in need? You know, I mean, we have plenty. Anyway, that's commentary. But I think there is a very specific line, and that's where we muddy the line, and that's what makes the issue muddy. I'll focus on loving people, let the government focus on who comes and who doesn't. And I'm not going to complain about it.
And this is an abstract question, right? But let's say that the American government decides that we're going to ban from this country all sojourners and anybody that qualifies for least of these. So then I just roll over and go, well, Lord, it looks like we don't have anybody that fits that description here. I'm solid.
It's not like we don't have plenty here anyway.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
It's not like you're going to run out.
The government banned them. They kicked them out. They said, look, there's no least of these here anymore. You're on your own, Christian man. Good luck.
I don't know. Jesus said you always have the poor with you, and I think that's just always true. I mean, they can keep kicking them out. There'll be others who make, you know, poor decisions.
That's right. No one makes the poor like this country. We'll make more. Bova?
I felt three sets of eyes staring at me on that one.
It's not because of that weird hat you got on.
Hey, man, this is a cool-looking hat. Don't judge me. You're wearing a halfway beanie. Don't judge me. Whatever. Okay. So here's what I keep running into. I feel like I wear two hats. Okay. And I did just make this statement.
I see what you did there.
Intentionally. Yeah.
You picked the wrong one.
You must have a nice one underneath you, that. Sir.
Tip of the cap to you. I feel like I wear this one hat that says that I'm an American citizen, and I do worry about the safety of my country and the safety of the people that live here. But then I wear this other cap that's much better, and it's a flat cap, and it's got patterns on it and stuff like that. But like it's the cap that I call being Christ follower, right? Like I'm called to take care of people. I'm called to take care of the sojourner and the least of these, right? Like that is an important piece of being part of the body of Christ is showing that love and going even further than that. That is an amazing way to win people over for the kingdom of Christ is to take care of them. It's the action of clothing people who need it, of feeding people who need it, of giving shelter when it needed. It's an amazing way to get yourself into a place where you can really start showing people the love of Christ from the perspective of, I want you to be in our kingdom. And so I don't have an answer to fix it, obviously. And I don't know where my hats should cross. Because, like, I get the concept of not wanting to invite violence and invite issues into our country as a physical country perspective and a physical government perspective. I get wanting to keep out people who could harm others. But then I totally also get the concept that, like, that's not my job to worry about. Like, I really shouldn't. If I'm going to invite somebody in my house, there's a good chance they could stab me. But you know, does that mean I don't invite them?
I mean, isn't the question, though, like, we were already doing that with a fine pen, and instead, like, the events over the weekend are a giant flat marker. You know what I'm saying? Like, we were already doing that on a case-by-case basis. And instead we said, well, you know what, this is too much, we're just gonna ban the lot.
Right, and see, that's a very good point, and that's why I don't think it's the best idea to kick to stop everyone from coming in, but like I get the reason behind it. Like, I do.
I suppose if I can articulate it, I think you get the fear behind it. Like,
yes, yeah.
Right, there's reasoning for just about it. Anything, but like certainly this is being propagated by fear. The selection of countries, like although consistent with the previous government list, like don't actually have a track record of causing violence here. In fact, where the most violence has come from, those countries are not on the list. And it's falsely being tagged as a Muslim ban. There's tons of Muslim countries that aren't on the list, right?
Right.
So, like, I think it was attempted to be done with reasonable intent, but it is certainly based upon, it is reactionary, and plays to a fear that I'm not sure is actually healthy for us to be reacting to in this way. The vetting process, for all the concerns that people have stated about it, it's like an 18-month to 3-year process. Yeah. Like, it's not like people are just flowing in here. And so, like, there's some realities that I think are blurred on both sides of this thing, and
isn't the ban 3 months? I mean, it's not a permanent ban.
No, but that's the question. Is like, well, I don't even know why we're even doing that. Like, what is this 3 month in a span from, like, except for to keep a promise, except for to keep a political
it's
promise?
It's a purely political game because Obama banned Iran for 9 months, and there weren't riots, and the media wasn't going crazy, and Hollywood wasn't crying.
So his restrictions weren't near like this,
yeah.
And it didn't have anything to do with people that already had visas. Mm-hmm. And so like it wasn't the same thing. As a matter of fact, there's a good breakdown on the Gospel Coalition about, like, there's an FAQ about this, and it kind of breaks down first of all, if you read the order, most of what's being said on both sides is not accurate. Like it's a lot. Read the order before you go all flying off the handle about it.
Yeah.
But I would say that, like, the reaction is fear. Dan's right. Like, a country has its responsibility to otherwise protect its citizens. Whether this is doing that, and whether there was a risk in some of these things at these particular segments of people, and frankly, whether the executive order is legal, are reasonable questions people should be talking about.
That should be the conversation.
Those are reasonable questions. Now, here's the thing. Let's say you fall on the side of the folks where you're like, I feel like we should let people in. All right. So that's not your call. You're not running the government now. I would suggest that perhaps the way that you think you're going to change the government isn't going to happen. Okay. I don't think that's going to work. Here's what I would say to you, right-hearted person who may or may not live in the reality of what our democracy is. Okay. Your work's not done. You're just spending a lot of time fighting with people that you feel like are unreasonable and won't do the thing that you want to do. If you can't bring them in here and you're concerned about their well-being and you're concerned about how they're treated in the refugee camps, go. Go to them. Here's the thing. We're fighting. This is where I've had disappointment in people where if I sympathize, it is, I think we don't understand Sojourner. I think we don't understand, the perspective of how we care for people. I don't think that's limited to our borders. However, I recognize that a political system will limit to their borders. That doesn't mean mine is limited. So if you want to fight for it, if you want to fight for people to come in here, by all means, I hope that happens. I hope they find good places. I hope they meet Jesus here. I hope they live in the freedom that we enjoy. That's great. If it can't happen, if you're giving up or you're spending 100% of your time trying to reverse that, as opposed to actually, you know, going beyond borders, sending money, feeding, going to organizations and helping that way, like, do that. This perspective that says we can only have things the way that we want them, otherwise we're going to riot, otherwise we're going to complain, otherwise we're going to waste all our time trying to change a position that I don't think is going anywhere. And it's perspective, like, whether you think it's ignorant or otherwise, it's a perspective a lot of people have. And so if you want to change the world, you can't get so pissed just because you can't change it the way you want to change it. You got to work within the confines of unreasonable things that are going on around you. And, like, I actually had what was it I saw? There were people Starbucks, right? Starbucks comes out and says, "Hey, we're going to offer jobs to 10,000 refugees." And my first reaction was, "Awesome. Great."
Yeah.
People, and now here's the deal. They're not American jobs. You gotta read what people are saying, for heaven's sakes, before you start going to ban Starbucks. You have plenty of reason not to like Starbucks. This is not one of them. If first of all, if they look out on the landscape and they say, hey, there's 10,000 people who are fleeing their country, they could use some work. We're gonna specifically attempt to hire some refugees to get them some work in some of these countries that they flee to, then why? Why would I oppose that? I have no reason at all to oppose it. That's a stupid thing to be upset about. I used to, now here's the thing. Here's what I want to know. Those guys have been refugees for years. I don't know where Starbucks was 3 months ago.
No, that's true.
Six months ago.
It was popular to help the refugees.
You know what I'm saying? Like, the relevance to the executive order is certainly fishy. But, like, I don't, regardless of whether you agree with the president's order, I don't understand why you would be upset about an international organization that says, hey, we're going to try to help these guys out with some work. There's some political posturing, sure, but, like, I don't care.
Yeah.
They're the outcome. Support exactly. it. What's the matter with you? And so, like, I saw stuff like that. What else did I see before I came in here? Oh yeah, that one, the holdover, the attorney general from Obama's administration that was refusing to defend the order, and she got fired. Trump fired her.
Yeah.
And someone's like, this should not happen. This is outrageous. I'm like, well, the guy works like she works for the president and isn't doing what the president wants. I feel like that's within
normal
realms.
That's what anybody would do.
Everyone would fire her. That's not outrageous. Like, here's the deal. I got plenty of things that I disagree with this man about. I think the executive order is an overreach. It might not stand up in court. But here's the thing. Like, it's not reasonable to fire someone who doesn't do the work you have them doing. Like, just think for a moment. Fight the battles that are worth fighting. But if you're wasting your breath screaming in the streets because he fired an employee that he has every right to fire, that's stupid.
Yeah.
Stop fighting the battles that don't exist. I started to write this like 4 or 5 days ago, and my basic thought was the Trump presidency is a grand opportunity for the church. It is a fantastic opportunity for the church, and it's basically the opportunity to take back control, right? It's the risk you take when you put the good that needs done into the world into the fickle hands of an electorate. If you don't like it, okay? If you don't like what's going on around you, if there's an American idealism, it's to pull yourself up by your bootstraps and get the work done, mm-hmm. okay? It's the success that's beyond what station, environment, or life circumstances or resources could ever predict. Okay, I know you think there's people who, I think part of Jesus stuff I would agree with, and you think the playing field is not level. Okay. I mean, it wouldn't be work if it was. Right? That just means there's work to do. It wouldn't be a struggle if it was. You wouldn't be leading the charge. You'd just be along for the ride.
Yeah.
If you look out and you say it's unfair and it's not right, then do the work. But here's what I don't mean. I don't mean just like pick it in the streets and try to yell at the guy who I know you don't like. I get it. But like, chase the sojourner down if you need to. Like, if you want to put it on the line, if you want to make the difference, do that. Feed the poor, care for the sick, visit folk in prison, share your life, share your love, share Jesus Christ with the world that needs good news. If your doomsday predictions are right, they're going to need it. Right? They're going to need it. The root of the question is whether the greatest opportunity for our influence collectively, okay, is trying to change how the government does things or however whatever corporation or institution you don't like is doing things. Or if you micro-focus on what you're doing. What your church is doing, what your neighbors are doing, besides trying to move the government, which is how we're spending our energy. I'm not saying there's not, that our democracy flourishes on people attempting to sway government and opinion. That's positive. I think, the best thing that I saw during this election was Mike Pence's reaction to the Hamilton cast, who read something about, look, we're concerned about how this administration is going to treat us, and Pence looks at his boy and says, that's what democracy looks like. Mm-hmm. That's right on. Both of those are proper reaction to democracy. So, right, I'm not saying don't try to influence the government, but like, with the amount of energy that we're spending to try to get the government to do something that you are personally capable of doing, like, I don't get that. I don't get that. Like, I get it. You want to point out your grievance, but like, spend your effort working to solve the problem outside of the institution that you don't think is working right. Do that. All right. It's by the time you get the Titanic to turn around, which is this big infrastructure of things, you could have sent 100 dudes on jet skis to save the guy that was drowning. But instead, you're trying to pry money out of somebody's hands or time or visa or whatever it is out of a situation that you just don't exert that level of control. And I like your idealism and I like your heart. And, frankly, I'm in agreement on how you're looking at people, but like, you're trying to change a monolith, and I'm saying, like, if you want to put effort and time and money in, I think you can solve some of these problems. It's just, you can't solve them on your own terms. You don't get to dictate how the party in power handles things. And so you can try to influence it, but I would suggest that if you're spending all your time trying to get them to drop this type of executive order or how they look at immigration policy or whatever, you let like 15 guys drown trying to convince someone who's not going to move. And like, just send the boats. Send your money. Go spend your time. Take your family. Move over there. You want to. I don't care. Like, there's ways to solve these problems without having to completely change the infrastructure. I think you should do both. But like, what I don't understand is this intent that says, I'm going to waste my voice and my time and my energy. And I know you don't think you're doing that, but you are, because like, you actually have a lot more within your power, and I think you're wasting it. And that's regardless of whether you disagree with the order or not. It's regardless of whether you think the immigration policy is good or not. This was true 6 years ago when Obama was doing whatever he was doing that another group of people didn't care for. Right? Influence what you can. It's okay to try to move the macro needle, but like, where we are not focusing on the stuff that's within our control or saying like, I will figure out a way to influence this for the positive, in whatever means are necessary, then you're not committed. And so take your commitment. It's good. Use it.
I'm actually surprised, especially, I mean, Trump has a way of doing this anyway, right? But like the amount of time that we as a culture spend being indignant over things that are not shocking, right? Like these are all the things this man
promised.
He's
doing everything he promised to do.
This is it, like to the letter. Here's the thing. I told my wife this tonight. Like if he wasn't such a crazed maniac, right? And if I aligned with his ideals, I would love this man.
Yeah.
He takes presidency and he does exactly what he said he was going to do, right?
You've never met a man like him.
I mean, seriously, he's a one man train. He really is a complete opposite of what we are normally used to, in Washington. The only problem is he's slightly unhinged and he doesn't take criticism well and he's very reactionary, right? So like there are things about him that are infuriating, but they're not surprising. Right? Like, all his actions are not surprising to the least. He said he was going to do every single one of these things. And then he does them, and people are like, I'm outraged. And
it's only the people who didn't vote for him that are outraged.
But that's the thing. It's like, even
I'm kind of happy at everything he's done so far. I'm jumping up and down celebrating. I'm quite relieved.
I'm not in the same boat.
Him.
But he's
my friend.
Because he's unhinged mostly. But like, the thing is like, even if you didn't vote for him, you are well aware of what came out of his mouth during this campaign, right? Like, there's nobody that had no idea what John Trump was about.
Yep.
And like, he is doing exactly everything he said he was going to do. Every single bit of it. And he walked into office and did all those things. And I thought, you know, if I didn't think he was unhinged, he's the best politician we've ever had. You know, he said he was going to do something and then he did it. And then he just started bowling over people and saying, this is what I said I was going to do. So this is what I'm going to do.
And which really, honestly, Obama did the same thing.
He just didn't do it with near the fireworks.
Well, he just didn't do the things that like the
he did it arrogantly and said, hey, elections have consequences, and just moved on.
I don't know. Here's the thing. If Trump said he was going to shut down Guantanamo Bay, I feel like this first day of office, he would have hired a construction company down there and started taking the wall apart, you know, piece
driving
by
back
piece.
Himself.
So like
Obama just isn't as effective.
Yeah,
as he is.
I feel like he still tried to operate within the constraints of his own office a little bit.
Here's the thing: the presidency expanded the use of executive orders. Matter of fact, that's what a lot of the complaints are on. Like, well, look at all this executive orders that Trump is doing. He shouldn't have had the power to do that.
I don't like presidential orders.
No, so that's the thing: is like there's parts of this. Like, irrelevant as to whether I would have agreed with his executive order or not, whether he has the right or should have the right, any president, to do things like that is something we should be concerned about.
Sure.
It's a nation of dishonesty. Like, we're just not being honest about things. Like, for the things that we were concerned about, if we're okay with it when it otherwise fits our narrative, then we're being foolish and dishonest. We're being short-sighted. And that's a serious risk for the country. And I think that is not even for our good, even if it got the thing that we wanted done fast and easy. How you get it, how you accomplish some of these things, these are going to have consequences. Here's the thing. Some of the gains that the conservative side has seen from a Trump presidency, if they could have been instituted by executive power, and DJ Trump pisses enough people off, they'll just be taken back out by executive power again. And you didn't move the culture. You're just passing around the pissing plate. True. You know what I'm saying? So like, you gotta be very careful about what you call a win. A win is a culture moves and said we value life.
Right.
The defunding of the Planned Parenthood by executive order isn't a culture shift. That's a validation of people that voted for Donald Trump. And so you got to be careful where you're calling balls and strikes and victories here.
Yep.
There is a serious risk that although things that otherwise I might support may happen over the next 4 years, how you got them there will actually push the culture in rejection in the wrong direction. I'm not saying temporary good isn't positive. I'm just saying I think you need to be prepared for that. That's a reasonable thing. In fact, a likely thing. Unless there's like a significant change in like the direction of what people are thinking, which I'm going to doubt.
Right.
So, I mean, we just need to be cautious about that. All right, Mike, what do you got?
Dear Life from the Path. I love my parents and would do anything for them. They have never been good about managing money.
Mm-hmm.
They are both retired now or on a fixed income, and they have been asking me or one of my four adult siblings for money to help with their bills each month. I don't mind giving, but recently my siblings and I have become annoyed because while they continue to ask for money, at the same time they are also taking short trips, which include hotels and rental cars, and inviting friends out to dinner.
Hey, don't meddle.
What are the odds?
They also have a storage locker full of junk that eats up several hundred dollars a month. We have offered to help them clean out the locker and possibly make money from some of the items in there, but they never commit. Should my siblings and I continue to help, or should we put our collective feet down? Okay. So I don't have a direct example here, but like I have been going through questions on how to be generous to people at different stages of life, right? Like there are some folks that I have run into that God put them in my path to help them, right? But like my help also facilitated that like you also need to learn how to live, and we're going to do that too. And then I've met some other people where I'm like, look, you know, you've kind of lived your days. And so generous is just generous, and that's the end of it. It's not going to come, like my help and provision is not going to come with a bunch of life advice and you got to change this to do this or whatever. It's just like, well, okay, good enough for me, you know? And so like, I agree. This is a tough struggle, right? Your mom and dad, they've been working their whole life or whatever. They retire. Obviously they're acting like a bunch of fools here, but like, I mean, how much are we talking? A couple hundred a month? I mean, you know, what's the deal? I give them a couple hundred a month. Just call it what it is. Tell my wife told me how to stop.
How expensive would it have to be, Mike?
$300 a month. That's too much.
I think they are throwing money down a flushing toilet until they get them to stop the toilet.
Dan says, cut your parents off.
Say, that's it, Ma.
I mean, you know, they have some
honor thy
things,
father
like,
and
like,
what?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, get rid of that rental thing, budget storage thing, whatever it's called. I mean,
yeah, I mean, you're taking all these.
You gotta get your budget in line. You gotta live within your means.
Yeah, but what's the $200 to you? Let's say it's within your means to give them the $200. Do you keep it just on principle?
I mean, I would want to help them. I mean, but I would want to help them by shoring up, first of all.
I mean, let's say they're like 70 years old. You know what I'm saying? You've got to try to teach them a lesson. You know what I'm saying? You gotta school them on how life works. They're 70.
Well, they obviously need it.
Well, you give them the $200. That's what they need. They want to take short trips.
But then they'll need it again.
That's what
They'll
I'm saying.
They'll just keep needing it.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, you going to teach them how to live now? Or you just give them the $200?
Is it foolish for someone to live outside their means, Mike?
I don't know.
You don't know if it's foolish whether or not you should live outside
I don't
their
know.
Means?
I mean,
I feel like you have an answer for that question.
I mean, it's within their means if I'm giving them $200.
Okay, so let's say that they stop these trips and could live on their own. Is it more generosity of the kids to just keep forking over the money, or is it more generosity for them to... maybe not teach him a lesson, but...
No, it is teach him a lesson.
Fine. School him. Yeah. If a 70-year-old is making a stupid decision, yeah, I'm going
to
stop him.
What if I give them this $200 a month and they go out on these short trips? And that's what's allowing them to do it.
Ignore the storage locker for now.
I would have that conversation. I'd be fine with that.
Yeah.
Admittedly.
Well, that's what it is then.
Here's what I'll say. I'm more on your side. I think it's great to have generosity for your
parents.
It doesn't
feel that way.
I'm asking the question of is it foolish for these parents to be living outside of their means?
No, they get to take a short trip.
No, Mike. Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
Now, here's the thing.
They're being foolish with their money. Yes, it's great for the kids to continue to be generous, but I think it's perfectly understandable for the kids to go, hey, Mom and Dad, you took care of me for years. I love the fact that I get to take care of you. I'm happy that I'm blessed in this place that I can be generous with you.
But stop with your bold skills.
Let's
get on with it.
Let's talk about practicality. Let's talk about the only reason that you're able to go on these trips is because I keep giving you money.
And they say, yeah, son. That's the deal.
We appreciate your generosity.
Yeah. Just like I change your diapers.
Yeah. Continue with the aid.
And I would still have the conversation of, hey, let's talk about what it looks like to save up for those rather than going on once every month.
I'm going to die, son.
Yeah.
I don't have time to save up.
Here's the deal. Here's the deal. Don't spend your time going on trips. Maybe you should love on Jesus where you are.
I do, as well as in the hotels.
You're tell yeah, me, as well as in the hotels and my rental cars.
You're
going
to tell me the Lord's plan for my life?
You're going to tell me that the money you spend on hotels and rental cars couldn't be spent better places.
Yeah, I save people in Boca.
Oh, man.
Oh, whatever.
Here's the thing, Booba. That's a very difficult slope to go down.
It is.
Because I could look at almost everything in my own life and be like, I mean, I could sell that and give it to somebody else.
Yep. Hey, man, isn't there a precedent for that?
Like that hat you got on there.
Yeah.
Isn't that not justifiable.
Isn't that kind of in the Bible, though?
You still bought that hat?
I did. You're right. I was foolish in doing so.
Ah, you should sell it and fund my trips.
Isn't there something to be said that that is kind of what we're supposed to do, though?
I mean, that's it. That thing. You going to school them? I don't know. That's maybe where I have a hard time.
I will be honest when I say I'm not the right person to school them, but that doesn't mean I can't bring up the Bible.
But you in that path, right? It's your job to school them because you're forking out $200.
I mean, it's good to have the conversation. Say, Mom and Dad, we want you to enjoy life. You've worked hard. You've done some great things. We want to help you. We want to support you, but we also want to be good stewards ourselves. We have to be good stewards. I have to be good stewards of the money God gave me. And just throwing money at you month after month isn't a good stewardship on my end. If you're doing it because you need food, we're going to make sure you have food. We're going to make sure your heating bill is paid. You know, but let's talk about managing your money. You probably have the money already. Let's just spend it more wisely and enjoy it. Yeah. Enjoy your retirement.
I don't even know how you raised me, you being this stupid.
Wow. That was a big jump, Mike.
That's what you're saying, is it not?
No, it is not.
You have been so foolish with your money, I don't even know how I turned out.
Loving in that rather than walking up to him and be like, hey,
no,
you
can tell lies in that. That's what you're saying. You take the truth and cut it into
being
small sliver.
Being loving is lying?
Let's see what the secular has to say. You make me sick, boo. Your mom's and your dad's. You gotta
like
get a couple $100, you know? Here it says, Secular says, put your collective feet down. You and your siblings are good children. That's a stretch. They just wrote you a letter. How well do you know these kids? Maybe you stole from them your whole life. But it's time for an intervention. Before giving your parents more money, you should all sit down with them and help them create a budget, because they're probably stupid. They'll take that well. Taking into account their fixed income, which they had no idea about, thought money grew on trees. And what your children can afford to supplement. Then tell your parents they must live within that budget. Period. Their expenses must be trimmed, and the storage unit would be an excellent place to start. Yeah, I hear you saying. I mean, I hear you saying. I get what you're saying. It's a logical way to approach the thing. But, like, you can look at your moms and be like, hey, moms, no more money for you. We're done now.
Okay, real-life situation. Just today, I'm corresponding with my mother-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to sit down and help her with the budget. I can help her put a budget together. She's been very responsible with her money. She has, you know, no debt, yada, yada, yada. All right. She's, you know, getting to that retirement age. She's like, she just wanted a different set of eyes.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that I'm smarter than her. But I happen to have a nice little Excel spreadsheet that'll, you know, add everything up and we'll just look at it and we'll make a plan and I'll help her with a savings plan It's just as an outsider saying, hey, and she's like thrilled. They gave her a big list of homework to start filling out, you know, on costs and expenses and stuff. And we'll start putting that together. And so they might welcome it. They might. They might resist it.
Yeah, they might resist it.
The dude probably will. The dad.
I think it's pretty reasonable to make the case that, like, I think Dan's stewardship of my own home here. I'm trying not to end up like them, having to scrape by and make my kids support me. It means I can't be dumping all my money, excess flying out the door on you.
I just want to go on short trips, man.
Yeah, we can do that a few times a year, but I ain't paying for that all the time. We'll get you an RV.
Yeah.
You and Dad don't have to pay for a hotel. You can drive wherever
you
want.
Were 8 and you couldn't poop for like 3 days and I sat with you in the hospital? Well, I forgot about that already. Huh? I see what you're saying. A couple $100. No big deal. All
right. Maybe, remember when I give you my kidney?
If you had sprung for some brain flakes, I wouldn't be in this position.
Maybe we was raised like a hooligan.
It's called fiber, Ma.
Thanks for hanging out with us. You've been listening to Live from the Path. It's going to be back. We'll see you next week. I have no plans for that either. We'll hopefully the president will do something. Michael will get riled up about when we talk about that. In the meantime, if you have any comments on the show, shoot us an email, info@livefromthepath.org. Also, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Hey, man, here's the deal. We were gone for like 3 weeks, and I happened to check the YouTube. Like 18,000 watches over 3 weeks. I just assumed nothing was going on. People still watching stuff. Most of them are just upset about the caps for sale. And some guy was upset about our rendering about the discussion about the ESV.
Oh.
I can't remember what it was, but he wasn't very happy with us about it. In either case, go watch YouTube stuff. It's out there, lifefromthepath.org. All right, we will see you next week. In the meantime, be faithful in the means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Path.